Texas Parks and Wildlife Podcast, providing an exclusive look into efforts to conserve the wild things and wild places in Texas.
Hello there, I'm Lydia Saldana with Texas Parks and Wildlife Foundation. This month, we're joined by Pat Murray, who heads Coastal Conservation Association, a national organization that got started right here in Texas. Pat, thanks for taking the time to be with us today.
Oh, it's always a privilege and an honor. So glad to be here.
Great. Now, for those who might not know about how CCA came about, can you give us the background in a nutshell?
It's a neat story. It's almost got fable-like qualities to it. In 1977, 14 recreational anglers got together and at a Houston tackle store looking at rampant overfishing of redfish, speckled trout, species that were really, really dear to them. And they got together and said, let's make a difference. And that's exactly what they did. They began to build a grassroots system that's been here for, 40 years now, and has spread across all three coasts and has made a real difference in marine conservation and in grassroots activation and in habitat and a bunch of dimensions that those original 14 might not have even imagined when they first got together.
Yeah, of those 14, how many are still involved?
That's a great question, because it's dwindled down. You know, the 14 also has become a little legendary as to who exactly those 14 were. But we, believe it or not, there are some real early originators and early framers of CCA that are still around. A fellow that you probably know the name, Ronnie Luster. He, great conservation leader, truly one of the guys that pioneered the crab trap pickup, and he's still as active as can be, just active as can be.
Now, I suspect that you're probably a little young to have been one of those 14, but I know that you've been involved in CCA for a long time. Can you share with us how and why you got involved?
You bet, and I have been. This is my 20th year, so of those 40, I've been here for half of them, and I got involved. I was a fishing guide. I was a light tackle fishing guide in the Upper Texas coast, and specifically in the Galveston Bay complex. And so I was very familiar with GCCA and the model of Gulf Coast Conservation Association, obviously the predecessor to CCA. And I donated trips and spoke at chapters and did all that, and really admired the model. I admired that it was putting conservation into motion, and particularly the willingness to dig into difficult advocacy issues. And so that was super appealing to me, and then was really blessed to get hired and as a assistant director, which is essentially helping create and facilitate grassroots local chapters. And it's been a very, very rewarding 20 years, I will tell you.
Well, that's awesome. Now certainly the success with the Redfish Recovery Act that got it all started back in the 70s, was a key thing that put y'all on the map. What other conservation achievements are y'all most proud of?
There's a lot of them, particularly when you look across all three coasts. But no doubt that original victory of eliminating gill nets in Texas waters and Texas coastal waters and game fish status is critical, because I think it put a ball in motion that's really still rolling today. The work that's been done throughout the entire Gulf Coast in Florida, Louisiana, the net bans there are really points of pride. Some of the founding work being done in the Pacific Northwest, our first steps now in California, which is an exciting new frontier for us in terms of recreational-based marine conservation. And in the East Coast, there's some amazing stuff going on when you look at some of the reef restoration work in the Chesapeake. It's really exciting because it is a broad footprint that touches a lot of fisheries and a lot of people.
And you mentioned that y'all started as GCCA, Gulf Coast Conservation Association. When did y'all start to expand, and how has that growth trajectory been?
It's like a lot of growths. What happened was, it's kind of a neat story. What happened was, there was more and more confusion about what, because we had the Gulf Coast Conservation Association, the Atlantic Coast Conservation Association. At some point, there was even the Florida Conservation Association. We were broken into pieces with the idea that sort of regional approach would help focus efforts. And what was happening was creating tremendous confusion. And so what we sort of defined was we really are a coastal conservation association. We are one entity with one shared mission with just a lot of different places. And so that's when we started branding the CCA Texas, CCA Florida, CCA Maine, CCA everywhere. And it speaks to sort of the core of CCA's advocacy focus, which is making sure we're local, state, national, and beyond. And because you almost can't manage fisheries if you don't have that broader approach. You know, fish have fins for a reason, and they sure don't care about state lines and federal waters and state waters. They swim everywhere. And there's so many issues in so many areas, we just had to make sure we had a united front on some of those important issues.
Well, and we could certainly talk about some of the conservation successes and things, the good things that are happening, but I imagine there are some things that keep you up at night in terms of conservation issues, marine conservation issues. What does keep you up at night?
Yeah, you bet. There's plenty of them. You know, we're always concerned on the advocacy level, on the federal level, about federal overreach. It's a term that's used a lot, but we see it in a lot of fisheries where you get the federal government sometimes trying to manage fisheries that would be better managed by the states. And then you see issues that are a bit more on the local side. And look at oysters in Texas. That's become so topical and is so important. And you think about how fundamental oysters are to the health of our bays and estuaries, and that's a real issue. It's a real issue. So there's definitely a lot of things to be excited about, a lot of things to be proud of, but there's also plenty of work to do.
Okay. Well, you mentioned the oyster issue, and Carter Smith was at a Parks and Wildlife Foundation board meeting just a couple of weeks ago talking about this. For people that don't know what the problems are, can you describe some of the issues that are happening in our oyster fishery that we all ought to be concerned about?
Sure. You know, there's been a lot of instances recently, and you've probably seen them if you follow this, is with undersized oysters, overfishing in oysters. And honestly, too, the oysters as a Texas population have had a 1-2-3 punch of, you know, some drought years, some flood years, some storm years, the associated sedimentation from that. There's just they've had a rocky road environmentally. And then when you get significant oystering pressure on top of that, it leaves in many cases nothing but the base of the reef, and we even discussed at that meeting a little bit that you also are opening yourself up for a real critical red line issue, because now with so many regions on our coast, really delicate regions that are being oystered that maybe shouldn't be, and with areas that are being over oystered, is that who knows what happens if we get a little environmental blow on top of that. It could set us back a long, long way on one of the most critical pieces of habitat in our bays and estuaries.
Now, from CCA's perspective, what do you all see or advocate or recommend as a solution to that?
Well, it's intricate. I think there's a lot of pieces, and I know from our side we're going to continue to work with Texas Parks and Wildlife, and everyone for that matter. You know, in working with the legislature and working with the oystermen, in making sure that we work with everybody and make sure we get the resource in the right place. In the end, that's what's going to get us through. We've got to have healthy estuaries, and healthy oysters are a part of that. If we don't have that, you know, really so much can be lost. So much of the victories and accomplishments and positives that you and I have been talking about for the last few minutes, you have a significant blow to oysters in an area, and you lose a lot of ground quick.
Now, I know the Texas legislature has a few more weeks in session until the end of May. Anything winding its way through, you know, those committees and laws that folks ought to be aware of?
Well, I think it's always important to keep an eye on it, because there is some exciting stuff in terms of potential for buybacks, which we saw work so incredibly effectively with shrimping. Anyone who's been around the Texas coast saw the shrimp license buyback program that was just tremendously effective. I think that's something that definitely could be additive here, because it really is creating a scenario to benefit the resource tremendously. So I will say, too, I'm glad you raised the point of keeping an eye on what the legislature is doing, particularly related to our natural resources, is that all of us need to be advocates. You know, I I always encourage people to get involved with CCA and people to get involved with all different entities that are working for that cause, because there's a lot of good ones out there. But one of the best things people can do is be an advocate. Get yourself involved. It's amazing what happens when people get involved and get active with the folks that they elect and get active with the issues that matter to them. You know, one person, it sounds corny, but one person really can make a difference.
Or 14, right?
Yeah, I like that even better. And then it becomes a force multiplier. You know, then you start to get, you know, a lot of people. It can make an impact pretty quickly.
Now, you mentioned in one of your earlier comments, you talked about federal overreach and the whole red snapper issue. And I know it's still early in the Trump administration, but are y'all seeing any kind of change of heart with any of these federal agencies toward that, any of these councils or anything like that?
Well, like you say, it's still early, and we're still waiting to see, you know, some really key appointments. But there's, you know, there's already talk of the value and importance of state-based management. You know, that's something near and dear to our hearts. You know, particularly for anglers who have fished Texas in particular, you know, you've seen the great yield from state-based management. You've seen, you know, redfish stocks. You've seen speckled trout stocks, southern flounder, a lot of these species, and you put it in the hands of managers that really are in touch with the resource and on a day-to-day basis and really in touch with the anglers, it makes a big difference. And so we're hopeful, like we are with every administration, and like with every administration, we're willing to work with everyone. We want to make sure we end up with healthy resources and anglers' access to them.
Switching gears just a little bit, just in the news very recently was news of a massive illegal seafood network that was uncovered by Texas game wardens, in your backyard, right, in Houston?
Yeah, in Houston.
Were
in
you
Houston.
Surprised that an enterprise of this size was operating like this?
Well, it was shocking. I mean, I can't imagine anybody wasn't shocked to see that. The scope, the amount of fish was just stunning. And what that, I think, has to alert all of us to is, and first of all, let me commend the game wardens that were able to organize that and execute that sting and that investigation. That's very impressive. And but it needs to alert us that, you know, Warren Buffett has a great line, there's never one roach. And they found a big old roach there, but boy, it scares you because that shows the scope of illegal seafood, and particularly when we start to hear of some of the fleets coming out of Mexico that has a tremendous amount of poaching, particularly on red snapper. It really makes you think that there probably is a lot more of that than we would ever imagine.
Now, of course, Texas Parks and Wildlife Foundation has worked with CCA, with y'all, on a number of things, including the funding of a new artificial reef that's being dropped off the coast of Port O'Connor right now. Now, why are these artificial reef structures important, and what can you tell us about this new reef?
No, it's a really exciting reef, and on a couple levels. The first is the ecological level. I mean, you know, putting structure in those near shore waters is critical for that biomass there. It's exciting on an angler level because it's in state waters, so it's got great management with Texas Parks and Wildlife Department managing it. It'll likely provide a robust fishery for a number of ground fish plus pelagic species like king mackerel and others. So that's pretty exciting. And then one of the ones that's personal to me on a number of levels is the incredible partnership that helps spawn it, pun intended, that, you know, when you have Texas Parks and Wildlife and Texas Parks and Wildlife Foundation and the Building Conservation Trust, CCA's National Marine Habitat Program, and CCA Texas all partnering, that's a pretty potent little group. And it's a neat public, private, just everything you want in a good habitat project, and really excited to see that go in.
So, and maybe you're not the right person to ask, but maybe you are. How long will it take before it starts attracting fish, and it attracts the substrate that attracts fish? How long will it be before that's a good fishing spot?
Well, I'm definitely not an expert, and there's a lot of them at the department. There's a lot of them at Heart Marine Research Institute, Texas A&M Corpus, that I know do a lot of those studies. And one thing I do know is almost immediately they start aggregating fish, and almost immediately you get some benthic growth that'll kick off in there. But what's exciting, and I wish I could recite the numbers to you immediately, but Dr. Greg Stuns has done some amazing research, and his team has done some amazing research on how quickly production starts. For a long time, artificial reefs got a a knock that they were just aggregation devices. And what we've found, I think a lot of us probably already intuitively knew, but what they have scientifically proven is that they're very, very much production sites too. You get really rapidly spawning, and you got a big juvenile population being generated from this, from these biomass centers. So it's quick. It's stunning how quickly they start to make an impact, not just in anglers' lives, but in the ecology.
Well, we mentioned CCA, we mentioned Building Conservation Trust, and we ought to go ahead and mention Shell also, because Shell Oil is brought has made a big donation to this as well.
Yeah, what a partner they've been on a lot of levels. They've been a big partner to the Building Conservation Trust. They've been a big partner to the department and to the foundation, and have really been willing to put their backs into marine resource, marine habitat work. They've been a key funder on that project, and to be honest with you, many projects throughout the Gulf of Mexico, and particularly the western Gulf of Mexico.
Now, you mentioned the Building Conservation Trust. Are there any new projects, pending projects you can tell us about?
Yeah, there's a lot of them, and so I won't detail every one for you, but what's exciting is it kind of speaks to, when I was talking about the broad footprint of CCA, is that BCT's is much the same. There's exciting projects going on in the Mid-Atlantic, in Florida, and throughout the Gulf, and also they're diverse. There's a thing called the floating islands technology, which is helping restore some of the eroding marsh in Louisiana. That's become almost an international issue. It's so widely known, widely understood. A lot of reefing work BCT is doing throughout Texas, and then reefing activities in Florida. They're really substantial, and it's an exciting time in habitat. And it speaks to sort of the core of what it takes to be effective in advocating and conserving our resources. You got to have good management, but you also got to make sure you're adding to the resource. And that's one thing that I think CCA and BCT do very, very well.
Cool. Well, as we wind this up, it would be really remiss of me not to mention your service on the Texas Parks and Wildlife Foundation board. After a decade, you're going to be rolling off the board in May, right?
Yeah.
That must be a little bittersweet. First of all, thank you for your service. And as you reflect on the last 10 years, what are your thoughts about just what's been happening on the Parks and Wildlife Foundation front?
Well, it's been incredibly rewarding. I'm a big fan of the foundation, and will always be. The foundation and its incredible staff, and the department, to be honest with you, and its incredible staff, and the unique partnership with the foundation being a support organization to the department, has really made some incredible things happen that I've been fortunate and blessed to see through the last 10 years, and particularly this last 5 years. With Annie Brown and her team, and folks like you bringing this amazing, amazing vision of helping and supporting and enhancing the work of the department. And when you see things like Powderhorn Ranch and the Million Dollar Reef off Port O'Connor and so many things, the Game Warden Training Center, you say, wow, this is incredible what's happened. But what I think and what I'm excited to watch is, okay, so what happens next? Because I mean, it's already pretty exciting. I can't imagine what the next 10 years bring. It's going to be incredibly exciting, but also, as all of us as citizens of this great state, we're going to get to watch some amazing projects.
Well, thanks, Pat. Thanks for your service. Now it seems like I need to ask you some really important questions. Like, well, have you been fishing lately?
Oh, that's the best question of the day. I love it. I haven't gone as much as I should. And it's funny because I always remind people, don't forget to fish. It is so easy to get caught up with everything from, all the important things like families and jobs, all the way down to sometimes the trivial of catching up on emails. We got to remember to fish. If we want to be connected with the resource, we have to fish. And I was fortunate to fish in Rockport a little bit last week. But I need to fish more, because there is nothing like an activated angler to make a difference. If you go back to that original 14, the reason they gave up their time and their dollars and their influence was because they cared. And the reason they cared is because they fished. And And so I think it's an important thing to remember.
Well, now, of course, you mentioned you started your career as a fishing guide, and I suspect that one of the reasons why you took the job with CCA is it gave you an opportunity to do some fishing, right? Now, can you share your most epic fish tale with us?
Oh, my goodness. I wish I had a great whale story that was the monster that got away or didn't get away. I will tell you, you know, it's funny. Some of the greatest fish stories I have are almost more about the people than the fish. It's funny how that is. And maybe that's what is that incredible sort of perpetual part of fishing and hunting, for that matter, too, is what it does to change your life and what it does to change the way you look at resources and the way you look at your fishing or hunting buddies. So probably if I were to say my greatest fishing stories would all be found in the anglers that I've been able to fish with, and many of who are some of my closest friends in this world.
Well, that's a wonderfully philosophical way to end this conversation. Anything else you'd like to share with our listeners?
Well, I'll again ask people, get involved. You know, of course, I have a bias towards CCA, but it doesn't have to be CCA. There's a lot of great groups out there. But what I do ask is for everyone to get involved. If everyone who even had an inkling to care about our resources got involved, we'd be in a different place. And particularly if you're an angler, take the time to get involved, which can be as simple as joining a group like CCA, and then that can go as far as you want to take it. But I promise you, no matter what, if you're advocating for something you care about, something you're passionate about, you'll get more out of it than you could ever put into it, I promise you. So it's worth doing.
Thanks for joining us, Pat.
Oh, it's my pleasure. My pleasure. Anytime.
Now, till next time, thanks for listening.
Texas Parks and Wildlife Podcast is brought to you by Texas Parks and Wildlife Foundation, supporting high-impact conservation projects across the state. Find out how you can help at tpwf.org.